Hey everyone, we're back. It's Sonia here. Thank you for joining us. It is episode 198, and we have another heart to heart. So I'm so excited to share our special guest today. We are going to be entertaining you and educating you collectively. Based on whatever energy we have left at 5 o'clock at night. I know it's a little bit different time for you, Sabrina. So this is a perfect segue, guys. Grab your coffee, get your notepads. You know, some of you might be cleaning the house, some of you might be on a walk. Couple tips. You can always screenshot where you left off so you can circle back to it or pause the show and make some notes. That's what I like to do. And Sabrina, you know, I'm going to have you introduce yourself and then share the tip with us. What do you like to do when it comes to listening to podcasts?
So I'm Sabrina Trobak, and I actually do most of my listening to podcasts while I'm driving in a vehicle. And so it can be hard if I need to stop or pause or something, or I want to remember something. I'll often just throw it in Siri, just say, "Hey Siri, remember whatever," and she puts it as a note, and I've got it in there to go back because, of course, I'm driving, so it makes it a bit more of a challenge to do some of the other things for sure.
Well, and that's what today's going to be about, right? You're going to pick up different nuggets and different tips just like you do on different shows. And I love how you use Siri because I don't use her in that element. And that's going to be what happens today. So tell us more. Tell me, let's open the doors. Tell us a little bit who you are.
Sure. So I am a reg registered clinical counselor. I live in Fort St. John, British Columbia, Canada. I have my own private counseling agency where we're really working on identifying and understanding the impact of your core belief. Often that core belief is feeling not good enough, not important, not valued. There's, the healthy version of that core belief is feeling good enough, important, and valued. And that's kind of the end goal of the counseling with the clients that I'm working with as they get there. But we often see people who struggle with anxiety, depression, self-doubt, just feeling not content, not happy in their life. Often that core belief, not good enough, not important, not valued, is more significant. And so if we just try to change the things, and we're not really looking internally at that core belief piece, it makes it hard to see long-term success. We end up kind of falling back because we're constantly trying to prove to ourselves that what we believe about ourselves is true. So if that core belief is not good enough, not important, not valued, healthier coping strategies doesn't fit. It's now out of balance. So we often end up going back to those old ways of doing things that do reinforce and support that core belief.
Okay. So much there to unpack. So much there. It's almost like I feel like you just hit pause on a tape recorder and you spit it out so perfectly. So not good enough. What was the second one?
Not important and
Okay.
not valued.
Okay. And pretty much, if I understood what you said, you help your clients flip the script. Where right now traditional practices aren't working because their nervous system is so deregulated, believing these false beliefs that don't align with who they are.
Right. As we kind of say, you're constantly trying to prove that what you believe about yourself is true. And so until you change that inner belief, you're not going to have a lot of success. We see a lot of people focusing on these things out here. If I do this, if I do this, if I do this, I do this, then I'll feel better. But the problem is coming from within. If you've got a hole, if you're feeling not good enough, not important, not valued, if you're struggling within, the only way you're really going to have any time, any kind of long-term change or success is you've got to figure out that internal piece.
You do, and I completely know where you're coming from. I'm going to use a weight loss example. I have a lot of clients that have said to me, or have said in general, their reason, their why for working out, being a trip or a wedding or some external purpose. But that motivation fades. that consistent effort becomes very quickly non-existent because their why isn't attached to something inside of them. It's attached to something outside of them, right? So
So when I'm working with clients that are struggling with kind of things like that around weight loss, we're not even just talking about why do you want to lose weight. We're talking about what do you get out of having the extra weight?
what do you get out of having the extra weight?
Yeah,
That's a
because
great question to ask. So what do they get?
well, you know, everyone is a little bit different, but often what it comes back to is I get a bit more space.
Interesting.
It's a guard I can use. If someone doesn't like me, I can say, well, it's because of my weight, not because they don't like me as a person.
So they hide behind it.
Absolutely hide behind it. You bet. You bet. The other thing is, we know that people have higher anxiety, they have higher cortisol levels. When we're feeling really stressed, our brain wants a dump of serotonin. Well, one of the best ways to get a quick release of serotonin in an unhealthy way, but it's very quick, is sugars, fats, and starches. So I'm feeling stressed, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I go and eat 4 cookies, 8 cookies, 10 cookies, whatever it is. I can feel myself physically calm down, usually within 5 to 10 minutes.
So that's sugars,
Fats,
fats.
starches.
So fats would probably be, in this case, not your healthy coconut oil,
No,
but McDonald's.
butter, McDonald's, fried foods, you bet, all those kind of things. So we have enough serotonin in our gut to send it to our brain, but when our gut has to give that up, our gut goes, whoa, we need some refill here. So it makes you crave those sugars, fats, and starches. You get that replenishment of that serotonin that's sitting in your stomach waiting.
So now the impact, okay, so do you know the impact of serotonin on hormonal women like Gen Xers that are going through peri or menopause or anybody else? I know you just touched on anxiety and depression, but I know for a fact when it comes to different hormones, specifically the happy one, dopamine. People with ADHD, for instance, have a lower threshold, a higher threshold for dopamine. They don't, it takes a lot more for them to get their dopamine hit. And that is something to consider. Is that the same with serotonin as well? Is there a parallel as well when it comes to the same to this hormone?
Yeah, you know, I think all our hormones generally kind of come from that same place, right? So our brain learns what we do to get a quick fix of it, and then it does those things, right? And most of the time, I would say probably the vast majority of the time, it's unconscious. We're not even aware we're doing it. Next thing you know, we're scrummaging through the fridge, while having a piece of toast with cheese or whatever it is, when there's an apple sitting right beside it. The
But
apple
yet
doesn't
we
give us that same chemical boost, so we go for and we're not even aware of it. And then we can beat ourselves after and go, you should have had that apple, but you didn't. You went for the cookies and toast instead, reinforcing and supporting that core belief, not good enough, not important, not valued.
All right. And in that moment, we need to have strategies in our back pocket to be able to address the change in hormones when it comes to craving the sugars, the fats, the starches. When it's kind of like when you get a headache and it's too late to take the Tylenol, right? You should have taken it at the onset before you knew it was going to happen. You should be prepared of what to do so when this happens. So do you have a stage one of awareness for, and I maybe just gave it away, but a step one of where people can start when they know this is happening, when they start to become aware?
Again, it all kind of comes back to that core belief, right? So if I talked to 10 women and said, what's a strategy you use for eating healthy? They would say, well, I need to eat more fruits and vegetables. I need to not buy sugars, fats, and starches and have them in my house. They know the strategies. They just aren't applying them. Why? Because they don't reinforce that core belief. So if I believe I'm not good enough, not important, not valued,
Yeah.
I'm going to be drawn more to the foods that reinforce that. Sugars, fats, and starches, I can beat myself up because I'm eating too many calories, right? Eating apple, that supports the core belief, good enough, important, and valued. But if that's not what I believe about myself, it's not going to last for very long. I maybe, you know, eat healthy for a week or 10 days, but then I end up kind of falling off the wayside. That's why we fall off, is because we're not supporting that core belief.
We're not supporting it because we just don't see it as possible yet.
Oh, for the vast majority of my clients, they don't even know it's there. They don't even know what
There we
it
go. There we
is. So
go.
that's that first step for us, is that awareness of how often is that core belief being triggered? How often are you going, "See, I knew I wasn't good enough. Oh, screw it. I'm just going to have a piece of cake because I'm not good enough anyways."
Okay,
How
so
often you're looking at what's under the behaviors?
I was going to say, okay, so that's the next question I have that may not seem logical, but it's logical to me. So I'm going to go there. What if they had that piece of cake?
Yeah, go ahead and have the piece of cake, but don't
Right?
beat yourself up for it.
That's my point. Like, could they have that piece of cake and make that negotiation with themselves? If I have this cake, I'm doing this consciously, done.
Right.
And I'm going to enjoy it with a tea. I'm having a girlfriend over for coffee and cake, and this is conscious. And in that case, they are good enough, aren't they? They're treating themselves as important and valued.
Right. Yep, for
Okay.
sure. And often that what it is, if we're making more conscious decisions, we often are feeding and developing that core belief, good enough, important, and valued.
Got it.
But you have to remember, it takes your entire life to build your core belief. So if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and older, and you've now 100 times consciously thought about how you are good enough, important, and valued, it's still a minimal fraction of how many times throughout your life you told yourself you weren't good enough, important, and valued.
Amazing.
So it takes a lot of time, a lot of real conscious thinking to really challenge and change those core beliefs. And they don't usually go willingly. They'll try to, you know, rear their head as much as possible as well.
Well, and I believe we've all experienced the waves of this. And again, I want to let our audience know that, you and I are both professionals in our fields. We've done years and years of research and study, and it's ongoing. So we might make it sound easy or that everybody should know it, but yes, of course, it's not as easy as it seems. We're trying to give you some simple tips, and you just so happen to have two knowledgeable people on the same topic who can take the conversation and expand on it quite easily. But if you have any questions throughout any of this, drop them down and reach out to either one of us, and we will dissect it, go over it with you. Whichever. However, to
I
help
always
answer
say,
your needs.
yeah, I always say to my clients, simple is not easy. So there may be a simple solution, but the actual application and challenging yourself to do it, not easy for sure. Takes a lot of hard work.
Look, okay. And sometimes it might feel like our life's being uproared as we're going through this because we are living. You and I have been there, and we've made it through the other side, or we wouldn't be able to talk about it. That's the only way, again, to our audience, that's the only way you're going to know you're working with the right person. They have walked before you. They're here as a guide to help bring you to where you want to be, but their expertise, their knowledge, is what you need in your corner because it's not easy. We, like you said, we've been conditioned to feel in society to feel these things from the minute we've been in elementary school, and
Even before.
we put our hand up and it's the wrong answer, and we're embarrassed in front of the whole classroom.
Yeah.
I mean, for some reason that was acceptable. Of course, we didn't know better versus what we know now. Sure, I guess, right? But the not good enough, the not important, the not valued. I'm still going to bring this back to a weight because my youngest daughter went to a Catholic high school, and this was maybe, I want to say, 6 years ago now that she graduated. can't believe that. And they did female measurements in front of the whole classroom in gym, including going on the scale. She did not like it at all. She felt these things. She came home and she was very upset. She felt these things. They're not good enough. They're not important. They're not valued. And this is in an environment where it should be inclusive.
Yeah,
So,
should be accepting anyways, no matter
yeah.
what your body type looks like, right? That's just, really ultimately is kind of about shaming,
It is. It
right?
is.
Because
And an
even
inter
if you are perfect weight, perfect height, you still don't want everyone in front of the class to know it.
You don't, but it's not just that age group. It's the older generation, the baby boomers in their late 70s who are still, oops, or not even in their, I'm just, for example, I know people in their late 70s that are still hyper obsessed about their weight, looking back at all photos and they want to go back to where they were. And that means they haven't addressed these core beliefs. They're still trying to fit an exterior visual or an exterior motivation thing, whatever it is. And they're never going to be satisfied. They've always been chasing.
If I'm that weight, then I'll be happy. No, you
Yes.
won't.
Yeah.
I can guarantee it, you won't be. It's not the
So
weight.
it's not the weight and it's not how you dress. So I want to go on this too. Wear things that make you feel beautiful, look beautiful from the inside out, because you will start to address the suddenly you are good enough to wear a pretty dress on a Wednesday with perfume and curls in your hair. Suddenly you feel very important and you definitely feel like a VIP walking around the house in your prettiest dress or whatever it looks like. Whatever it looks like.
And what I
There's,
see happening is
yeah.
the other end of that spectrum too, where I feel good enough, important and valued. I've worked through stuff. My core belief is feeling better. So now I want to dress differently. I want to put on makeup. I'm happy to look in the mirror and see who I am. That core belief is not good enough, not important, not valued. You are going to struggle with your self-image, not really because of how you physically look, but because of what you believe about yourself internally. And so working on those two, where you do dress up, challenge that core belief, but then you're also working on that core belief so you feel more confident dressing up. Those kind of feed off of each other for sure.
So, I mean, we may not have planned to talk about weight loss and fashion and getting dressed a certain way, but for me, it goes hand in hand. What other areas would you notice this in somebody's life?
Oh, all areas. A big one that we see is busyness. See, we see people that are busy all the time, busy, 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 busy. Well, what do you get out of being busy? Chances are, no matter, there's going to be at least one, two, three, five, seven times in the day where you're going to feel not good enough, not important, not valued. As long as you're outside trying to make yourself busy enough, trying to make everybody else happy, try to please everyone else, try to get your kids in all the perfect activities, you're not focusing on you. So it's a great distraction to avoid dealing with your own stuff, whatever that looks like. We see that in, busyness, in anger, in alcohol, in drugs, in cheating, in lying, in self-harming behaviors, in depression, in all of it. It's everywhere.
That's hard, huh?
Most and what we often do is focus on the behavior. Right. So if I don't do this, I'm drinking too much alcohol. So I'm going to stop drinking alcohol. What I need to understand is, why am I drinking more alcohol? What's going on for me?
Yeah.
Right. There's likely emotions that are going that we're trying to suppress. Our brain is going too fast. We're having too many negative thoughts, worry thoughts, anxious thoughts, catastrophizing. What happens when I drink a couple of wine? That all goes away. I don't have to feel any of it anymore.
It's
Right. So
yeah,
that's
no,
what.
you go ahead.
Alcohol is doing something significant and getting something out of it. Everything we do for a reason, otherwise we wouldn't do it. So if I can learn how to bring my brain down and slow my brain down in itself, if I can get better at feeling my emotions and sorting out my emotions, now I don't need alcohol to suppress my emotions and slow my thoughts.
So can that growth happen without realizing it. So for
Not
instance,
long term.
I know, personally, I've been doing my own healing journey. Like I know we always are, but I noticed just by looking back, I'm like, I barely drink anymore. Where probably when I, 3 years ago, I probably drank once a week, maybe twice a week. Now it's maybe once a month or once every 3 months. There's no rhyme or reason to it, but it's not often. So it's interesting how that's what I mean. Like, clearly I've done work in an area where I have released something that I didn't know I was holding on to. That's what I mean by the subconscious. Like, can you evolve from your negative habit? Not that that was a bad habit. There was nothing wrong with that quantity, right? It's not like they were bottles of whiskey. They were like glasses of wine. So, but again, that's important. Knowing the volume is super important in the storyline.
For sure.
So, and we might be talking about alcohol, and I might be sitting here being very vulnerable about it, but I noticed I barely care to have a drink. So
So the
explain
thing,
that. Yeah.
yeah. So the difference there is you're not really, it doesn't sound like over the last 3 years, you've really focused on trying to drink less. You're
No.
working on your own personal healing.
Right.
So as you're healing, your need for those coping strategies to deal with the stuff you haven't helped with, you don't need it anymore. So we can see those behaviors change as we get healthier and healthier and healthier. But if you were just focusing on trying to drink less for the
Okay.
last 3 years, you would probably honestly be drinking more now.
Inch okay. Okay. So I handled it from the root.
Right. And that's what you ultimately
And
want to
that's
do. I have clients who do, they'll come in after, 6, 8, 9 months of counseling. They'll say, it's really weird. I was drinking like 1 to 2 to 3 glasses of wine a night. I haven't had a drink in weeks. Like, why? Are you trying really hard not to drink? No, I just don't feel like I need to. Well, why did you drink before? Because my brain was going really high. I had really high anxiety. I didn't know how to deal with my emotions. I was always feeling overwhelmed and stressed. Well, what's happened in the last 6 to 9 months? Well, I understand more about my anxiety. I have strategies to bring my anxiety down. I know more about my emotions. I know how to feel my emotions and sort my emotions out. So what do you need the alcohol for? Don't need it anymore, right?
Right.
So if you focus on the behavior, not going to have a lot of success. Deal with that underlying piece of why it's there. That's going to give you much more long-term success for sure.
And let's go there for a second. Feeling these emotions are not easy.
Nope.
Whatever the emotions are, you do not want to be there.
But you need to. If you want to heal, it's what you got to do.
Or if you have no choice to heal, you might be in a position where something's chronically wrong with you and you physically need to heal. You might not have a, you don't have a choice. You have to feel these feelings and they're awful.
Well, you know what? I think the sad part is that a lot of people do have a choice, and a lot of people do choose to never feel their emotions.
Oh, you
It's
know
not
what?
good, right?
Yeah,
And so
you're right.
they end up struggling with, pornography and alcohol and marijuana and lying and cheating and gambling and you name it as a way to suppress the emotion. But once you start to allow yourself to feel the emotion just a little bit at a time, you realize, oh, well, that wasn't that bad. I guess it was okay. I handled it on the other side. It's not actually fun feeling emotions in the moment, but we almost always feel better afterwards. Right. And so one of the things I do with my clients, because if I have a client that's, 30, 40, 50 years old, and they've spent decades suppressing their emotions, and then Sabrina comes along and says, "Okay, we're going to start feeling our emotions now." They're like, "Yeah, no, I don't think so." It's hard for them to even recognize and identify the emotions because they've spent so much time pushing them down. So I have an emotions list that I give to my clients. And so whenever they're feeling angry, overwhelmed, like they want to drink alcohol, smoke weed, whatever it is, I say, get out the emotions list and read through it. And the chances that the emotions that they are feeling will jump off the page at them is really, really high. So I'm not even necessarily feeling the emotions. I'm just reading the word. confused, lonely, sad, vulnerable, unheard, powerless. Even just reading those words allows me to feel them just a little bit, but it's not overwhelming.
Right.
As they do that more and more, they can get better and better at feeling those emotions. Part of what makes emotions hard too is never practicing it because you've learned how to suppress them. But the other part is it's very rare that we feel just one emotion. We're usually feeling 5, 10, 15, 20 emotions at the same time. Well, if I'm not used to feeling one and now I have to feel seven, that's scary. So I just shut it off.
Well, and the more work you do, the more you aware you become of your emotions. So that's where sometimes, again, I'm going to speak for myself. There was a lot of heavy, heavy days going through my different emotions. Now you're right. Coming out the other side, it's going to be amazing when it's all done, or it is amazing, like however you want to label it. But and that's again, I say it's going to be amazing for our audience because you're never done. You're never done. You think you're done, but then you grow so much and you're ready for more. Things just look different. They appear different, just like what Sabrina said. Something kind of jumps off the page when you read it or look at it or talk to somebody. I want to, we went over feeling the emotions, we went over hormones, we went over how important it is to tackle your limiting beliefs. I want to know, what happens when people start living in the now?
So again, if you're able to live in the now, you've got to believe in yourself, you can handle doing it. We look at high levels of anxiety. Anxiety is really about worrying about things that honestly probably aren't even going to happen, because we often worry about things that don't ever happen. But that fast brain where we're always the what if scenarios, that's high anxiety. And so when I learn how to understand where my anxiety is going, how my anxiety is impacted, the impact it has to my core belief, I challenge my anxiety, I bring my anxiety down. Now I can be present and in the moment. Well, what happens when I'm present and in the moment? I can have better connections with other people. But ooh, connections creates emotion, right? Because in order to connect, I also have to be willing to feel fear of rejection, vulnerable, lonely, self-doubt, insecure. I don't want to feel my emotions. So I'm going to stay busy in my head so I don't have to connect and be present and in the moment. And most of this is unconscious. We're not even aware we're doing it.
Wow. It's such a powerful cycle, but when we can get ourselves in the moment, I'll be honest, I spent all my time in the living in the moment now. I was put in a position. I have inflamed nerves in my head. So it's been 3 years now, and I've had to deal with the left part of my head and literally inflaming as I'm trying to live life. So some days all I can do is couch, bathroom. That's it. And I'm heading into that season, the darker seasons. The summer and the heat seems to be fine. So I know I'm heading into a cycle that isn't as bright as the summer. I don't want to say it's going to be hard anymore because it might not be. Although I know what to expect, it might not be. And again, going to your worst case scenario as somebody who used to have a lot of anxiety. And it's the people that we surround ourselves with too, right? They could be always, and I know my father, I speak with him daily, and his shoulders are earrings. He needs like hours of meditation a day and journaling. I understand, where he's at and what he's going through, but I also understand that this isn't helping. And if some things were to be more in the now, and you don't go from being at a high level of anxiety to in the now, there's a lot of work in between there to here. I mean, like I said, I've been on this journey for 3 years and I can start to notice the pieces. Well, being able to recognize the pieces of your own work is a different level altogether. Because, like you said, Sabrina, most of it is subconscious.
Oh,
As long as you show up and do the work, you don't realize the results. Here, I'm gonna metaphorically put it into perspective. I used to teach boot camp classes, okay? And we never counted the reps. We went by the buzzer. So it was a 1 minute buzzer for most cases. So let's just say we're doing bicep curls, right? And I have you grab a weight and I see if it's super light or if it's super heavy, or we find the right one, right? And you don't even have to count. You just get to focus on your moves. All of a sudden the buzzer dings and you're done. Well, next time you go to pick up the weights, maybe you're doing bicep curls now in a month because you've done other things. Well, now you can up the weight without even realizing it because it's easier, right? I said a month. Let's just say you do this Tuesday, you do this Thursday, you come back next week and you can like do a pound heavier, but you don't realize it because you're not counting. You're suddenly doing, actually how it starts is you suddenly start going faster and then you suddenly start doing more reps because you can do more in that buzzer. And then that weight is easy. When that weight is easy, you bump up. So when I was doing the boot camps, people were starting at 10 pounds, but maybe ending at 15, 18 pounds. And that's progression that you don't, it's not intentional. The intentional progression is your weight, your physical journey for most people in this case. But you know, changing the level of the weights or being able to do your sit-ups that you couldn't really do at the beginning. This is kind of how this evolves as well. But what we're talking about, Sabrina has found a way of putting it into pictures, like the drugs, the alcohol, the substances or the crutches that we go to, you brought to light for us. I used a different example, and the reason why we have these examples is most of this is unseen. It shows up in our body. But it out, it reflects our outer world and we don't recognize what's going on. We don't recognize why our outer world is acting or doing the things it's doing, and we're causing it. Like the cause and effect.
You know, I say we're even drawn to it, right?
There
Like
we
people are
go.
drawn to law, like people. So if I have a lot of chaos in my life, the chances that I'm going to have friends and relationships that also have a lot of chaos in their life is really, really, really high. What do I get? Again, what do I get out of chaos? Well, as long as I'm focusing on all the stuff out in front of me, I don't have to deal with my own hurt, my own pain, my own sadness, my core belief, not good enough, not important, not valued, the emotions I don't want to feel. I can focus on everyone else. But as I start healing and sorting through things, consciously figuring out who I am, getting better at feeling my emotions, understanding what's going on for me, understanding my triggers, now I don't need that chaos anymore. So now my friends and my family who have a lot of chaos, it's just not meet my needs anymore. So it can also cause us to even have to kind of shift some of our relationships because the people that we're with right now are usually a reflection of us. And so then if you get healthier and work on things differently, those relationships, you're not meeting their needs and they're not meeting your needs anymore either. So it can cause some changes in relationships as well. But that chaos is usually unconscious. I just go to it. I've been doing it for so long. It's kind of like breathing. I don't even have to think about it. Making changes has to be conscious. If you're not consciously making change, there's no change. It's not happening.
You can't just go through the motions.
No.
There are some things as you're working on your journey that feel like you're going through the motions, but you're still making the conscious effort to choose to do it.
Right. It's that conscious piece of going through the motions. You got to understand why you're doing what you're doing. Challenge yourself on it. Be aware of what it feels like, what emotions you're feeling with it, what you're getting out of it. Then you're understanding and getting something out of the motions that you're going through. But as soon as you get back in that cycle where you're just doing the same old, there's not going to be a lot of change. Not long-term change, that's for sure.
You have a book.
I do, yes.
Tell us about that.
Great. So my book is called Not Good Enough: Understanding Your Core Belief and Anxiety. So I started my private practice looking at this model of therapy in 2010. And within about 6 months, I had a waiting list. And I hate having to turn people away. So I decided to write a book. So the book is a handbook. So you read a little bit of information and then you apply that information to your own personal experiences in little activities throughout the book. So it's a real hands-on approach to really challenge and get a better understanding of your core belief, of how it's developed over your life, and then also how you can challenge and change that core belief to feeling more good enough, important, and valued.
I love it. And I don't know if you know, but I wrote a book right here called Your Story Matters. And it's a woman self-love, self-awareness workbook.
There we go.
Very similar. I went, I don't know if you've done this, but I did go next level and put together an easy course to guide people through the book. So like you said, they don't need me, right? And these tools and resources are just scratching the surface for what's available when they work with you. Your contact information is going to be all in the show notes. But as we say goodbye, what would you like to share? What else? What other tidbit would you like to share?
I think I guess one of the pieces that I think that is important is we hear tons and tons of people talking about anxiety, 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 anxiety. I think an important shift to be aware of is anxiety is actually a reflection of your belief in yourself. So a lot of people think of anxiety as kind of about the trigger, right? I have anxiety of flying. Well, if it was about flying, every single person on the face of the earth would have anxiety flying. Not everyone does. Anxiety is my belief in myself that I can handle it. So if I believe I can handle flying, I'm not going to have anxiety. If I believe I cannot handle flying, I'm going to have anxiety. So anxiety is a symptom of that core belief. If I feel not good enough, not important, not valued, I'm going to have more anxiety. So the opposite of anxiety is confidence.
Okay. So anxiety is actually about the belief in yourself, and the opposite of anxiety is confidence.
You betcha.
Okay. Oh, this is so value-packed. Everybody's gonna love this.
Good.
Opposite. Confidence. Now, if I can read my handwriting, when I go to do the show notes, will be great. They say creators aren't necessarily the neatest writers. Ladies listening to this, gentlemen who are catching some of this, thank you so much for your time today. You know, we both appreciate being able to be on this platform and to share little things that might catch your attention to make you more aware. And once you become more aware, well, I'm going to speak about yeah, logically, once you become more aware, you become more curious. When you become more curious, you dig a little deeper. The more information you know, the more confident you become because your beliefs start to change.
Yep. Agreed, agreed, agreed.
Perfect. Perfect. Like I said, folks, this is episode 198. I stick around because we've got 199 next, which will probably be a solo one. And then we have an amazing surprise coming up for our 200th episode. There will be a giveaway. I will be doing an amazing giveaway for my 5-month package. I'll be offering one for one person for free for 5 months, which is a huge, huge giveaway. So make sure you get your entries in and you listen to episode 200. And I will see you guys all then. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.